Good day, everyone, and welcome to the UBS Energy Transition Call with EGO, hosted by John Winland. My name is Ben, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please press star zero on your device, and the coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties that this conference is being recorded. And now, I would like to hand it over to your host. John, the word is yours.
Perfect. Thanks, Ben, and welcome everybody to the latest installment of the UBS Energy Transition Call Series. As usual, this is your host, John Winland. I head up Alternative Energy and Environmental Services Equity Research here at UBS. And in this call series, we attempt to connect UBS institutional investor clients with energy experts and innovative companies that are in some way enabling or driving the energy transition. Today, we'll be talking urban EVs with EGO. Just as some background, EGO is a in-production German EV producer focused on the urban environment. Some background, on July 28th of 2022, EGO announced a business combination with Athena Consumer Acquisition Corp, ticker ACAQ. Following the closing of the transaction, the company is expected to become publicly listed on the New York Stock Exchange under ticker EGOX. All right, on this call, we're very happy to have with us today Ali Vetsi, who's the chairman of the board. Before I turn it over to Ali for some opening comments, just a few logistical items. The format of today's call will be an opening presentation by Ali about EGO and the business model, followed by Q&A. Ben, who's the operator, can provide instructions on how participants can log any questions after the opening presentation. There are slides to accompany today's discussion. They were emailed to pre-registered participants about 20 minutes ago. I know many of you prefer to ask your questions anonymously. Do feel free to email me if you would like topics brought up on the call, and I will bring them up anonymously for you as time permits. I'm sure you have my email address if you found your way to this call series, but it's John, J-O-N, dot Windham, W-I-N-D-H-A-M, at UBS.com. And then lastly, a disclosure, as a UBS research analyst, I am required to provide certain disclosures related to the nature of my relationship or UBS's with any company discussed on today's call. A full list of disclosures is available on ubs.com/disclosures. Alternatively, do feel free to email me and I can then send them to you. And then lastly, this call in and of itself is not a recommendation by UBS to transact in any security. All right, with the logistics out of the way, Ali, thank you so much for being here. We're looking forward to learning more about the EGO story. So I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, John. Good morning, everyone. A good day, I guess, depending on wherever you're dialing. And thank you for taking the time to listening to our story at EGO. I guess when you put the words energy transition, EV, public market transaction, we sort of paint a rather scary picture given regards to how the industry has performed so far and the lack of performance in terms of delivering on the promise. And we decided to start the presentation with a slide because we think actions speak louder than words, so that you guys get to see actually the production facility in Aachen, Germany, with the team and with the cars that are coming off the production line. As John pointed out, we are an in-production EV young enterprise, which actually takes great pride in having combined innovation, disruption, and capital light business strategy, ultimately trying to deliver on the EV promise by also adjusting the risk associated with that. On that note, I'll walk you through, and then as John said at the end, feel free to ask any question to the extent that that it's allowed. I would be happy to answer the questions. The company has been founded a couple years back in Germany, Aachen. Aachen, for those who know, is basically the likes of MIT of Germany, where a lot of innovation and particularly production technology has been born and delivered and exported to the automotive industry. As part of that structure, there is a very, very strong scientific foundation in that city and also in the region, with great access to human capital that actually provide resources to nurture and grow on that front. A few years ago at EGO, we sort of looked at the energy transition and the disruption that was coming about with the electric cars. And our view was, are we doing the right thing? Is the design of the product optimized? Is the design of the production technology optimized? And more importantly, how does the future of electric mobility works in conjunction with the grid capacity, charging, battery size, and so on and so forth? Questions that a few years ago, people looked at us and said, look, instead of worrying about that, can you please design a car which is large enough, goes fast enough, and has the longest range? And we sort of looked back and said, oh, we don't think that that's the right approach for the production of the battery electric cars. And that's the birth of EGO. Fast forward, we stand here from a regulatory point of view with unlimited EU homologation. So as far as that process is concerned, we're basically no different from other very known brands that you see in the market. More than 1,200 cars. In the meantime, of course, the number has increased, but more than 1,200 cars already on the road in Europe driving. By now, more than 7 million kilometers of driving experience, more than 9 terabytes of data collected. And more importantly, the factory in Germany, Aachen, is in production, and we have a concept that I'll walk you through a little bit later down in the presentation, decentralized growth, which allows us to actually cyber-physically transport the factories to other countries and take advantage of the opportunities, such as Inflation Reduction Act, for a very, very optimized combination of CapEx and time. That's well on track, and of course, given regards to the segment in which we are focused, the price point, the technology behind the car, and this decentralized production technology, we have a plausible path to growth, which sort of underlines the excitement about the leverage that we put forward in terms of technology and disruptive utilization of the product across its life cycle. And last but not least, the story of growth in 2022-23 cannot be possible without partnerships, and there we have basically taken advantage of the strategic and close partnership with some of the brands and names that most of you know well, helping us continue to rethink and optimize the journey, first of all in terms of connectivity, second of all in terms of our direct-to-consumer approach, and a couple of other partnerships have been announced in the meantime, which are not reflected in the presentation, the last of which was about 10 days ago with Trafigura, one of the largest metals and mining company, in terms of supporting us with supply chain, battery, metal, and so on and so forth, so that we basically build a stronger foundation as we now seriously grow our operations and expanding on the sales front. So long story short, when it comes to the technological kernel at EGO, the disruption actually goes into three directions. One, disruptive view to the product itself, how we build products, which is fundamentally different from how the industry builds the products. The production technology, and also not only the view to the physical assets there, but also to the digital interface, the ecosystem that allows for the smart data layer to capture and utilize the production information across the user and product cycle. And last but not least is, of course, the ecosystem as it relates to digital user experience, whether in charging or connectivity or utilization of the asset across its life cycle. What do I mean with that is, first of all, we build one of the cars that, in our view, is viewed as one of the most sustainable urban BEVs. Why? First of all, is the choice of material that we basically deploy. The industry uses typically steel and customary material that go into the production of the car. We actually don't use any of that. We use aluminum and polymer, which are typically used in the aviation industry. The obvious reason for that is the weight rigidity ratio. The other less obvious reason is the durability of aluminum as it relates to oxidization, fatigue, and so on and so forth. And of course, the use of polymer in conjunction with a very unique and disruptive aluminum space frame, which is the next sort of disruption in how to build a car underneath, allows for optimizing the weight and taking out parts of the production cycle, which are typically associated with significant capex, heavy pollution, quite a large energy consumption, and ultimately less optimized for the world in which we live. When it comes to the build-up of the product, we claim to build the cars in less than half the time and for a significantly lower amount of capex in comparison to the standard industry. On the battery front, we actually have looked at it very differently to the industry again. The battery at EGO is not the typical shelter chassis, shelter pack, or in simplified terms, an integral part of the structure of the car, rather a proprietary aluminum housing that allows us to maintain absolute freedom as it relates to modularization of the battery and also being relatively cell agnostic. I'm sure a few years ago, being cell agnostic didn't mean much to the industry. A few years fast forward with the price of raw material through the roof, availability a concern, and a lot of geopolitical tensions, the ability to navigate between different cell suppliers, different geometry of the cell, whether prismatic, cylindrical, becomes a resilience in your supply chain, which we have successfully incorporated. And more importantly, as you move forward, there will be a disruption in technology as between NMC and LFP. You took cobalt out of the equation. There will come a point in time that we as human race will find a solution to replace lithium. At that point in time, given regards to specifics of current cells and them being an integral part of the chassis, and of course, part of the overall design and safety of the car, replacement for, call it the classical industry, would be relatively expensive. In our case, you basically change like an old Nokia phone's battery, roll it out, replace, roll it back in, flash, off you go. Of course, I simplify that. I'm sure the R&D team would jump out of their chairs when they listen to the story, but as far as the consumer is concerned, that's the process. We also looked at the cycle of customer patience and appetite for products in the EV is reasonably shorter than what it used to be in the ICE world, simply because in the ICE world, you had the complexity and the ability to play around a little bit with different features and therefore extend the life cycle of a particular product, for years. In the EV, you basically look at a connected toy. It's powertrain, battery, and connectivity. There is not much more to provide for an opportunity in terms of change management and so on and so forth. And therefore, connecting yourself to one platform and limiting or basically deploying capital on one platform with derivative management becomes an expensive exercise. But of course, as a young enterprise, we decided not a great choice for us. So what we did is we resorted to innovation again with the smart skateboard platform that allows for multi-derivative, multi-product build-up on the same platform, significantly reducing the development cost and time associated with various products. A great example is, as we launched our urban car, as John referred to, we also decided, you know what, in the urban environment, you see a lot of last-mile delivery that these current, call it rush to electrify the vans of the world, seems to be a sort of overkill, both in terms of the battery cost as well as the cost of the vehicle itself, that the uptime slash downtime when you wait for the charging. So why don't we deliver a product for the urban environment to satisfy the last mile delivery? It took us less than 6 months to basically use the same platform and reintroduce a new product, in this case, eExpress, that provides around 940 liters of cargo space for the urban environment, configured to provide a variety of applications from pharmaceuticals all the way to retail, all the way to groceries, and still for the same price point. Now, you move on to the next level and you look at, okay, a product that at least in our view seems to be disruptive, whether for good or otherwise, needed to also be built through a disruptive production process, because otherwise the equation, both economically and from a productivity point of view, doesn't add up. And if you load a product which is supposed to be very nimble, very lean, and of course easy to deliver to customer with a production facility which is capital heavy and quite resourceful when it comes to depreciation of the balance sheet, it basically tilted out of equation. So what we have done here is actually reimagining how production process works. If you look at the current industry, whether ICE, EV, hybrid, or otherwise, different brands, it really doesn't matter. The production process has four fundamental stages. Stage number one, press job, where you deploy a few hundred million euros of capital, dollars of capex, consume a significant amount of energy, and press these metal sheets to form the 2D structure, after which you move these 2D structures into the next relatively capex-heavy part of the process called body shop, where these long line of robots do the spot weldings I'm sure you've seen in different videos, and then create this 3D structure by putting the 2D panels together. The third step would be the paint shop, where not only is capital heavy, but also it comes with connectivity to the automotive, to the hydrocarbon industry in terms of price volatility. But most importantly, it's one of the most pollutive part of the process when it comes to production of cars, regardless of whether battery, electric, or otherwise. And last but not least is the assembly, which is typically with the overhang, large halls, heavy industrial foundations with the structures which are basically connected to the ceiling, lifting the cars and then moving them along in 50, 60, 100 stations, depending on the complexity and brand. What we have done is we've decided, you know what, you do not need the press shop because you can actually create another extra dimension in your body shop. So instead of robots doing a two-dimensional work of spot melding, what if we use AI to enhance the ability of those robots to work simultaneously on a 3D structure? The idea, relatively simple when I spell it out that way, but getting those tolerances and the ability to deliver quality welding on aluminum with 0.0001% fault rate is something that has taken us around 5 years of training of that AI and mastering the art of thermal and geometrical, you know, dimension adjustments, so on and so forth. More importantly, we wanted the technology to be sophisticated from the application, but to be simplified in terms of supply chain. So we do not use geometrically very complex profiles. Of course, I'm simplifying here, but to draw a parallel, you can imagine the profiles that from a geometry you see in doors and windows with slight turns and bends. They go into our very advanced autonomous robotic production facility, and there are two personnel that manage these robotic body shops, and they have a job which is relatively simple. Put the aluminum profiles into the machine, push the button, take a cup of coffee, get out of the way, and then roughly 7 minutes later, the 16 robot structure in three dimensions delivers out a construct which is dubbed as aluminum space frame. The idea is nothing extraordinary. The concept has been used in Formula One and in racing industry because that construct provides one of the highest safety for the passengers inside the car. However, it was barely used in the commercial and series production because creating an autonomous robotic solution for that is something that hasn't been done before in the industry for the last 100 years. The second part is we also decided, so we don't have a press shop, and of course with that, not only you save capex, but also you significantly take energy out of the equation. While we were at it, we decided, why do you actually need a paint shop? Because with the current technology which is out there and a little bit of an innovation thinking out of the box, you can impregnate raw materials, for example, polymers, and deliver really fascinating color color variety. And now add to that vacuum-based thermic forming, and not only you can provide best contour, but also you get a final touch and feel of the kind of paint that you see. I'm trying to avoid some of the technical terms, not to bore you and confuse you, but you basically have the same finish as if the car was painted metallic or otherwise. And with that, you also take the painting out of the process. And when I say we take something out of the process, it's not that we take it out of the process, park it on a supplier somewhere in a third world country, and then we say, you know what, we have solved the equation. No. It doesn't exist. The Ego cars are not painted. Not a single drop of paint exists. And of course, that provides a very interesting upside. When you don't have paint, you're not worried about scratch, because the scratch is removing paint from the surface. When you also have a thermic form polymer, you have a higher ability to absorb displacement, impact resistance. So that, of course, translates into different characteristics when it comes to accident and life cycle management. But more importantly, we have also innovated around our clipping technology, where you connect these exterior polymer skin frames and parts to the underneath 3D structure. You're basically doing the same work as iPhone, Apple does with iPhone. There is an underbody structure, and then there are panels that are being assembled onto it. This allows you to later on look at life cycle management. If you have an accident, you don't need to repair the car. You don't need to worry about it. You go through the app, find the right color for your panel, order first service center next to you for $100, and a couple of hours later, that panel is changed. So the idea of residual value, life cycle cost, and so on and so forth are being completely reimagined. Also, you bought a car in red. 3 years later, you know, you just don't like red. You want it blue. Shy of $1,000, and the car is renewed to blue. Old panels go for 100% recycling. New panels are installed, and you basically enjoy the ride. And all of this are being done in a production facility, which when we inaugurated was the first 5G connected factory on Earth. We call it a microfactory. You've heard the term from some of our other colleagues in the industry. However, this one works, and this one is actually in production. Number one and number two, this is one of the only first production facilities in automotive industry, which if we want it, we can run it 100% on renewable energy, simply because by removing those energy-intensive parts of the process, we have significantly reduced the energy consumption of the facility. When the energy crisis in Europe broke out about 6 months ago, one of the first questions we had from a number of analysts and investors was, oh, so what happens to your gas? We told them, well, we don't have a gas connection. So, but what do you mean you don't have a gas connection? We don't need gas. So where is your power plant? We don't have a power plant. We don't use power plant. And if you look at slide number on your deck, slide number 13, you actually see the production facility with solar panels on the roof, which of course allow us to, during daylight, utilize as much as we want the renewable energy, bring the cost down. But more importantly, it's less about the cost. It's about the energy independence and the ability to solve for different scenarios. Our microfactory in Southeast Europe is actually designed with a solar park next door so that we can run the facility, if you wanted to, completely off-grid. Now, depending on the tariffs and availability of energy, you may not need to do that, but you have the freedom and the ability to do so. If you dropped us in the middle of nowhere, all we needed was to basically put for ourselves a solar park next door, connect, and continue the production. And obviously, we are very fortunate if your product is battery electric cars, in which there are batteries, each car is part of your storage capacity. Coming back to the product itself, there are three very distinct features in our product as a car, which we take a great pride, and we think it provides distinction as we move forward in the industry. Number one, the design of our battery naturally enables battery swap. So the ability to exchange the battery instead of always worrying about infrastructure, fast charging, no fast charging, but in London we don't, the grid doesn't have the capacity, but in Germany we don't have the fast charging infrastructure, but in other parts of the world, such as United Arab Emirates, Saudi, Thailand, the idea of fast charging is still not there. But what if you have high temperature, then how do you deal with that? We have decided to simplify, and we think the simpler, the better in terms of the ability to scale. When you buy an Ego, you get three options, and all of them are standard with your car. You get a cable, which is similar with a plug that you have with your iPhone. Find any normal wall plug where you plug in your iPhone, plug Ego there, and 6-7 hours later, you have 80% charge. That means regardless of where you live on the planet, we've got you covered. If you are committed to drive sustainable electromobility, we make sure you're enabled. Number two, you get a fast charging cable, the usual one. If you have a fast charging cable, fast charging infrastructure next door, feel free, use it. Number three, you also get the option for a battery swap. And here we offer two categories of battery swap. The manual one, which takes around 25 minutes. Different battery swap stations. We have already rolled out a few in Germany. And then we entered into a strategic partnership with our partner in San Francisco, Ampol. Some of you may know them. Really, really cool technology and robotics enterprise with two very good friends of mine having successfully rolled out for Uber first, and they just received another grant from UAE to actually do something more. With them, they have created an autonomous solution for battery exchange. Ego is compatible simply because our design of the battery is naturally swappable. We have combined the synergies, and with them we roll out the first autonomous battery swap in the Western hemisphere. In China, they used to do that successfully in scale. However, what differentiates or what creates a difference between what we do and how it works in other parts of the world is the CapEx. The battery swap stations that we roll out are significantly CapEx light, as opposed to what you've seen in the Asian part of the world, where per station you're looking at between $250,000 to $400,000. We're having one digit less, just to leave it at that for now. So in terms of energy transition and the exposure to the grid, we have solved the equation by simplifying and diversifying the opportunities for customers. In terms of durability, the aluminum space frame that you see on slide 9, top right, is designed to last a lot longer. There used to be a number of years there, but of course, as part of the public market transactions, we've been advised to be more conservative, so we removed it. But let's say it's several many years longer than what is supposed to be with a steel structure. And of course, that corrosion-free and durable structure underneath allows you to benefit from multiple renewal cycles of the car, which is also part of the circular economy concept we're very proud of. And the 100% recyclability of the exterior, top left on slide number 9, gives rise to low cost, sustainability across life cycle, but more importantly, peace of mind for customers. We take advantage of a very, very unique and advanced powertrain designed to last about 1 million miles. And here, credit goes to our supplier, Bosch. I'm sure you know them all. They deliver to most of the world. This particular powertrain with a peak power of around 85 kilowatt hour for Ego on this car, which is a four-seater, provides a very, very unique sporty driving dynamic. The car is designed with a slightly higher center of gravity, so when you sit inside, even though it's an urban car, you have a SUV would be an abuser word than a sales pitch. It's not an SUV, but it's a crossover feeling that you have. And of course, the G-forces we have created in this car, the lateral G-forces equal to college base car. So fun to drive, very sporty, yet provides absolute comfort and space for your urban needs. On page number 10, you also will see that while we try to do all of this, we do not compromise or torture the customers in terms of connectivity and the touch and feel. So the car comes in its own class with one of the largest displays that the industry provides, 23-inch. the Apple CarPlay, Google Play, connectivity, and so on and so forth. And not only that, we have also introduced Eagle Connect app, which is our proprietary digital platform that allows also car sharing, cross-usership, lock, unlock, so on and so forth. But those are not something that I would say are extraordinary. These are features that we just packed into to the car. This was the what part of the product, and you may rightfully ask, great, we understand, so what? The so what all boils down to cost and capex, because as we all have seen from the evolution somewhat painfully in the automotive industry, particularly in the EV in the last 5 years, if your cost is not low, if your capex is not low, ultimately it doesn't matter how beautiful the product is, it will be a painful enterprise journey. So our focus primarily has been on bring down the cost as associated with the car, the parts and the design and the development and so on and so forth. Use off-the-shelf components to the extent possible, which is what Tesla did at the beginning very successfully. Try to standardize and simplify and use smart skateboard platform that at the beginning I alluded to, enabling multi or you know, number of products and derivatives out of one platform that also brings down the development cost because that's being divided on number of platforms that are being launched. And, of course, take advantage of great partnerships. As you see on the slide, we work with a lot of tier one suppliers in the industry as our suppliers. And not only that gives us the opportunity to take advantage of the quality and the reliability they have, but also you take advantage of the economy of scale because they have solved the equation around some of their standardized parts by creating the scale and you just simply purchase some of those parts. Anything that has technology and proprietary patent is being done by us at Ego, and anything which is a complementary product, we very happily look at the industry, find the best in class, best cost, and our talent and ability is to integrate that, like the open architecture that we've sort of structured around the car. And the interchangeability also gives us the flexibility to navigate when you have supply chain issues. On slide number 12, you see what I described in terms of the differences between the production concept and process in the automotive industry versus Ego. And I think the slide is speaking loud enough in terms of comparison, the four-step process versus two. And the part that I left for this slide particularly was when you look at our assembly hall, again, you will see that we have tried to reimagine the assembly, so we did not go with the usual overhang structure with the lifting process. We have gone with autonomous SUVs on the floor, magnetically guided, all of them controlled through our overall neural network called Internet of Production, with a cycle time of around 10 minutes, 28 stations, so in 280 minutes, you basically go through the entire process. What also comes out of this disruptive way of looking at production is the scale. So our microfactories are standardized with 30,000 cars per year production capacity. And for that, you basically require a space of around, give or take, 100,000 square meters. This is particularly relevant as you try to take advantage of the decentralized growth, which is, in our simplified terminology, is copy-pasting microfactories in different parts of the world. You can fit yourself into available industrial zones. You can take advantage of the emerging or developing regions where the employment and or unemployment is a topic, and therefore there are incentives being provided above and beyond. And more importantly, you can even repurpose brownfield facilities to get in there because our assembly hall is only 17,000 square meters in a U-shaped format. And that, of course, gives you an abundance of freedom in terms of the choices you have to make. On slide number 13, you see what I reference to. This is the microfactory in Aachen. It looks more like a semiconductor facility. And by the way, when you come and walk inside, in terms of the cleanness, the noise level, and also the operability, you may ask a few times the question, so is this really a production facility? Yes, it is. There's something very important. The IT architecture that we've introduced to the industry, we call it the Internet of Production, in combination with our smart data layer and connectivity, allowed us to even connect the tools in a way that you can sort of call it prove them or prevent them from human error. Every tool is connected to the digital motherhood, for the lack of any better term, and the torque to be applied on a bolt nut on the assembly line. All of them are pre-configured and controlled. So a worker typically cannot apply too much or too less torque. And if, for whatever reason that happened, the digital trace of that fault is on the digital twin of that car, which is on the digital twin of that shift, and so on and so forth. So the traceability, quality control, and also lifecycle management has really become very different. In terms of replicability, of course, we are very, very excited about what opportunities are before us. One part is, and I had the pleasure today to be in Berlin in a conference between two countries, Germany and another country, in which the Minister of Investment from that country mentioned something which is actually at the forefront of our strategy. When you look at creating industrial development, employment opportunities, and integration, automotive and automotive clusters are at the forefront of GDP per dollars of investment, given regards to the employment opportunity they create, the exports, and the integration that they do up and downstream. The ability to do that for a fraction of capex and for a fraction or in a fraction of time using our disruptive microfactory is also something that we consider to be one of our products. So while you look at EGO as a potential battery electric car manufacturer out of Germany, and yes, we produce a car that you may or may not like it, and we fully respect that, the company has another product which is exporting its production technology. Have we done this? Yes, successfully, and by now twice. Outside of Germany, North Macedonia, contract signed, government announced, and groundbreaking start, or groundbreaking was successfully held. Construction is nearing start. Bulgaria is also work in progress. And in the meantime, we have received multiple requests from a variety of countries, emerging and otherwise, that they're actually inviting us to bring the production facility there. And given the production capacity is not huge, the cannibalization risk you see with giga or large factories does not exist. 30,000, in some cases, not even enough to feed the potential demand in one region or one cluster. And of course, when we take these microfactories to different countries, there are different models, but usually we, of course, take advantage of a good license fee, the royalty that comes with a car, and the partnership, and a lot of incentives that, you know, I'm sure you've seen under the IRA. And that potential program also exists in other parts of the world in different shape, form, and names. And, of course, we unlock that potential as we move forward. A great example is when you look at our facility in Macedonia, ultimately, if I simplify that, the incentives pay for the entire construction while we maintain 100% ownership. So in terms of capital deployment, we significantly optimize, reduce the amount of capital that actually EGO needs to put forward, simply leveraging our technology as a contribution and maintain 100% control. So that second product, the production technology, is a very, very important pillar. And of course, our ability to pivot around different products between urban, commercial, delivery, so on and so forth, larger, smaller, gives us the chance to also optimize product roadmaps across different parts of the world. Last but not least is our focus on the customers. We, of course, believe the world has changed, and the consumers are a lot more connected, a lot more focused, and a lot more aware. So we take advantage of an omni-channel direct-to-consumer. However, we do not fool ourselves by thinking the answer is only digital, so you cannot or you should avoid all the physical touch points. However, there is one common theme in everything you see we do as EGO. And of course, the jury is still out, but we believe that's the right approach, and that's significantly reduced the capital required for the business. So if and when we are a grown-up enterprise, I think ROCE would be the only thing we look at a business in terms of business metrics, because that provides for the best value or best judgment in terms of value for money as you look at a company or an organization in how we deploy capital to deliver return. Same applies to our go-to-market strategy. We either partner, and you've seen the name Amazon, announcement will come, in terms of leveraging that platform, because ultimately battery electric cars in 2023 are nothing but connected devices. So as far as we are concerned, we are in the business of consumer electronics. And of course, there are platforms for that. And that's why you've seen us also in CES with Sibros, a company that Google invested in terms of offering the future of connected mobility in the urban environment. So number one, taking advantage of e-commerce platforms. Number two, taking advantage of our own digital platform, the proprietary EgoConnect app and the direct-to-consumer digital shop. We also have partnered with a number of sales partners. These are not dealers in a traditional industry sense, with a brick and mortar, very expensive laying on our balance sheet. Rather, it's on their part, and we basically collaborate with them around a sales agency model. And last but not least is we basically incorporated the concept of VAM store, one or two in prime locations in key cities, in order for our customers to get an opportunity to touch and feel, understand the technology, and connect with the brand in terms of the vision. You see that on the slide number 14 down below, and the two pictures down below also show you what I told you about the panel exchange. For example, you see the panels are sort of hanging in the this is a brand store in Berlin. This is actually next to Apple shop in Berlin. When you walk in, you see different panels are sort of hanging over from the ceiling. Customers can go through the app, pick, choose the color, if the car had the damage, if that was the same one or otherwise, and then basically move on. On top of that, we also are very much aware of the fact that, as many of you haven't heard about us until today, we do need to work on our brand recognition and brand awareness. For that reason, we have signed Neymar Jr., the Brazilian football sensation, as the brand ambassador. And subsequent to the closing of the Polymarket transaction, once we get that homework and administrative work done, you will see him appearing and beginning to basically push for a more brand recognition and elevating the story of EGO in terms of sustainability. The common theme with Neymar Jr. is sustainable on and off the pitch, which is something that we are going to take advantage of. Huge attention at the back of World Cup came to football, and the commercialization that you see comes at the back end of that process. So we want to take advantage of that and build a little bit of momentum as we go forward. Let me pause here, I think, John, probably that's a good time to open for questions.
Yeah, perfect, Alex. Thank you. Ben, can you provide instructions on assistance? Can log any questions on the call?
Certainly. Thank you. Allow me to inform our audience, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your device. Thank you.
Perfect. Ben, feel free to interject as people ask questions. But I'll get the conversation started. Ali, Ben, thank you for the presentation. It's really interesting. I have a big picture question. When you sort of think about where EGO might be in 5 years, how do you think about the split in revenue or value of the company between actually making and selling cars and then actually making and selling the process by which you make cars, right? The licensing agreements and things like that. Just a little thought about how you know, the relative size of those two opportunities.
That's a great question. And I would need to sort of be careful around not suggesting any projections, but let's say on a denominated basis, as we move forward and the company grows, obviously, and it's very simple to calculate, each micro factory has around 30,000 car per annum capacity. Let's say, give or take, average price of the car, 25,000-26,000 euro. That gives you around $1 billion per micro factory. The speed of rolling out the micro factories with the one or with the number of micro factories that we have in the backlog will give the company a faster grow in revenue as a share of product sales. However, what the sales of our technology and licensing would do, or the contribution thereof to our business, is an overproportionate help on the bottom line, because those technology transfers, whether in form of license fee or royalty per car sold, are immediately trickling down to the bottom line, even for the factories that we have sort of already in the backlog to be built in, let's say, Macedonia or in Bulgaria. Therefore, to answer your question, I think the lion's share of our revenue as we grow will continue to come from the sales of the car. There will be a makeup on the positive side on the revenue from sales of technology, and an overproportionate, of course, boost on the bottom line, simply because that top line trickles down directly to the bottom line.
Got it. Thank you for that. And maybe, you know, you actually answered my next question, and that answer on the average selling price of the car. I think it said 25,000 to 26,000 euro.
Average, yeah.
Average. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, the direct competitors that are in that, both sort of traditional ICE cars that you're competing against at that price point, against sort of other EV offerings.
That's a great question. Thank you. Let me answer that question in two dimensions. First of all, looking at the space, the urban segment, I must admit, we are very fortunate that most of the other OEMs have decided to focus on competing where actually Tesla took the game. So if you look at the product roadmap that have been rolled out by most of the OEMs over the last couple of years, they all have sort of abandoned the urban environment and decided to redirect their products to compete exactly where Tesla is, which is, I would call it, for the lack of any better term, mid to high-end larger cars, more luxury, higher price. And, of course, that left a very interesting white spot for us, because don't forget, the first ban on ICE starts in the cities, London, Frankfurt, Hamburg, you name it. So first we need to solve that equation. Of course, while at $60,000, $75,000 a car, that is a solution, that's not a solution for everybody, and particularly not in Europe, given regards to the fabric of the society and also the architecture of the cities with relatively narrow roads, a smaller parking spot, and a lot of issues around traffic. That's one point. The second part, so the space has enlarged or has been enlarged for us thanks to, call it, focus by the other OEMs being taken away somewhere else. So we have a white spot here. A great testament to that is Mini closed down the EV in the UK, public knowledge. Smart closed down a facility in Germany, also public knowledge, and did not produce there. Volkswagen discontinued the car in that segment twice. Volkswagen also abandoned the car that they wanted to introduce in 2024-25. I'm sure you've seen Tesla's Technology Day. There is no Tesla Model 2, at least for now. So that gives us a very nice niche, but quite sizable market, and they have engaged Roland Berger, largest in the automotive industry. They have done that work for us, and there are millions of opportunities here, particularly at the back of conversion. Now I answer your question from a sales price point of view. In the absence of the economic advantages, it's very difficult to compare an EV with a competitor ICE, whether for Tesla or for Ego, it's the same equation. Now, when you look at the subsidies and the incentives that are being introduced, for example, in Germany or across Europe as an average, you have around 6,000 euros of government subsidies on each electric cars, and they continue for a number of years. So if you take our car and the 25,000-26,000 was including the VAT, deduct from that the 6,000, a customer basically cash out is around 18,000-19,000 euros. at that price point, it's a very competitive product. And when you look at the, and this is to answer your question, in a mix between ICE and BEV. If I just try to compare with the other BEVs, we are actually one of the, call it, more competitive ones, because if you sort of list the existing ones, even the ones which are to be discontinued, the starting price in that segment for a Smart Fit 2 is around 21,000 euros, and that's a two-seater, very different car under 10 kilometers of range. And then you work your way up, and then you come to somewhere around Renault Zoe, and then Mini Cooper Electric, and so on and so forth, where the price starts at a different digit. So we sit comfortably, I would say, in the lower quartile in terms of price, but offering a German-made, German technology value for money with very distinct features, which, for example, if one day we decided we want to do the battery swap as a subscription service, and we directed that to one of the partners that has actually come forward and said, look, I want to do this, meaning that's not an Ego's balance sheet, take out another few thousand euros out of the car price, and a customer subscribe to an energy delivery program, ultimately you're looking at a very, very different price point for the car. So are we comfortable? Yes, for that segment, we think we have a fair chance to compete and deliver value.
Got it. Thank you. And just, you know, I want to talk a little bit about customer acquisition, because I think it's a really interesting phenomenon that's happened, particularly around EVs. You know, Tesla started out and obviously dominates the EV market in the United States, at least the early days of it to date, and they don't advertise. I think a lot of people thought at that point, or at least traditional advertising, well, that they can do that because of Elon Musk. And then along came Rivian, which has had, you know, regardless of what you think of the stock, a lot of success getting custom orders with a straight social media word of mouth advertising. So I just wanted to get a sense of where your customer leads come from, how many are sort of direct to consumer, and how you see sort of the evolution of customer acquisition in the auto industry that seems to be going parallel track and coincidental at the same time as the evolution of EVs.
It's a very profound question, and I think you already addressed two very distinct players in that market. Tesla, they don't need to do marketing because the chief executive is a very, very successful marketeer as well. So that covers it. Rivian, not only they took advantage of the direct to consumers and so on and so forth, but also the product was one of the first pickup trucks that, you know, sort of got electrified. Look at the culture of mobility in U.S. People like that kind of car. It was an intriguing one. And, of course, the partnership with Amazon and investment was, you know, a big bang, because Amazon in itself is a marketing platform. Now, if you take those two, I would say, very distinct parts of the spectrum out of the process and look at all the normalized one in between, what we have seen, and we have data that we are analyzing, because we already have more than 11,000 customer reservations, so on and so forth in the mix. We intentionally ask Neymar, our brand ambassador, not to post anything about Ego, because we are still very, very Germanic when it comes to a promise is a promise. When we sign with a customer and we say you receive your car in 90 days, you receive your car in 90 days. Not 91, not 109, 90 days. So we start that process of pumping the news and pushing the brand out as soon as we're ready to actually cover all these orders and deliveries that we're already dealing with. However, when we launched our 2022 model in Berlin, which was a few months back, he just did one Instagram post, not talking about the car, just saying, look, what an exciting night in Berlin. And we had, between that night and I think about 48 hours later, roughly 3,000 customers signed. So what we see is the power of social media, the digital platforms, even, for the lack of any better term, what TikTok and Generation TikTok has done to the awareness and the followership, so on and so forth, in conjunction with a competitive and compelling price point for a product, does a big chunk of the work that in the past the dealership and the advertisement and so on and so forth used to do. Does it mean it is 100% replacement? I don't think we have enough data to say you can immediately retire everything, because we are neither Tesla nor I think the U.S. consumer culture is comparable to what you see in other parts of the world. However, is a big fraction of your spending going to be focused on making your product better and focused on the direct consumer digital channels? I think the answer to that would be, yeah, more likely.
Perfect. And we're getting close to the top of the hour here. Ben, quick check on the line, and then I have one email question I want to get to.
We have received no questions on the audio line.
Okay, perfect. We only have a couple minutes left. A couple different people asked this question. Thoughts about entering the U.S. market?
Number one, it's quite a sizable market that we should not ignore. Number two, becoming a listed entity in a very short period of time. We also, I think, owe it to our own corporate strategy to have a U.S. footprint. And number three, and this is where you see why I was so excited in taking a lot of your time talking about the production technology and microfactory. Having a microfactory in which the core CapEx is two-digit million dollars. And we purposely did not put all the numbers in the presentation, but just to give the audience a flavor of why we are so excited, as opposed to when you look at the industry with about a billion CapEx, and the ability to introduce the microfactory and bring it to commissioning in about 18 months, we have decided to actually bring a microfactory to U.S. subsequent to closing our public market transaction. We have started a conversation with a number of states. The Inflation Reduction Act is very, very encouraging. And more importantly, what we also do is, now back to our smart skateboard platform, the car that we introduced to U.S. is a larger, slightly bigger version of the same car. However, we stay true to our vision. We believe urban mobility and sustainable mobility is the name of the game also for U.S., particularly when you see what's happening in California with the grid, the energy, the queues, and so on and so forth. So we want to be different. We want to address this great market, but coming from offering a very different set of services to remove the pain and the concern that the consumers have.
Perfect. Ali, thank you so much for that. As we're at the top of the hour, we're going to start to wrap up, but I will turn it back over to you, Ali, for any final closing comments. Before I do that, thank you, Ben, the operator, for helping us out today, as well as all the participants for the email questions. Appreciate it. Quick advertisement. We have a lot of calls in the UBS Global Energy Transition call series in March. I'll just highlight the ones coming up this week. Tomorrow, we'll be talking carbon negative fuels with Aon Blue, intelligent energy storage with Electric Power on Thursday. And on Friday, we'll have Shoals Technologies, ticker SHLS. We'll have their management team on for a fireside chat on Friday. If you need links to any of those calls or for any of the other calls later in the month, please do email me. And with that, Ali, really enjoyed the story. I look forward to tracking your progress and tracking the closing of the transaction. I will leave the final words to you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, John, and also thanks to your audience for giving us the time and the opportunity to share your story. Just wish us all the luck we can get. Thank you.
Thank you for joining, everyone. That concludes your conference. You may now disconnect. Please enjoy the rest of your day. Goodbye.